It's quiet. Almost too quiet. What can you expect? It's space. Brutus flies his spaceship across the cosmos. Some call him an astronaut. Some call him a cosmonaut. Is there really any difference? Brutus flies through the asteroids, listening to his radio, humming a tune, living his little Russian life. Cosmonauts are Russian, in case you didn't know. Brutus gets a little buzzing in his transmission. Brutus hears static on his spaceship intermission transmission box. Fuck. Bzz, 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 bzz. Hello? Oh, an American man. Hello. My name is Brutus. Oh, hi. My name is Brutus. Nice to meet you. I'm an astronaut. Or a cosmonaut. Is there really any difference? That's what I think. Pretty lonely out here in space, huh? Oh, tell me about it. I just listened to my radio all day. Day? We're in space, Brutus. There's no such thing as day. There's only space. Oh, you're so right, my American friend. Is this bad? Is what I'm doing bad? If I'm doing a bad Russian accent, am I a bad person too? Hey, Brutus, where are you at? Send me your space coordinates. Let's go for a ride together. Oh, Brutus, my coordinates are beep 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 beep. And Brutus sends it in Morse code. And Brutus gets it quick and easy. Brutus quickly flies over to where Brutus is, and the two sail side by side together across the cosmos, across the astros, enjoying their lovely time together. Sometimes they'll look at each other through the window and wave. Sometimes they'll laugh. The other person laughs too. They don't know why, but they have fun together. Brutus wakes up one morning to an alarm. Wah, 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 wah. Oh, my alarm. Better go check that. Brutus walks over to his alarm and turns it off. Fuck. Of course he does. He turns it off and he notices a little iMessage from his spaceport down on Earth. And it says in Russian, Brutus, we know you're in cahoots with the American spy. Eliminate them. And Brutus gasps, what? I mean, what? I can't do that. Brutus is my friend. Fuck, I lost the accent. I'm ditching the accent. No, I can't. I'm too far in. It's a good commitment. Oh no, Brutus is my friend. Brutus takes the whole day. Well, there aren't any days, it's space. Brutus takes the time he needs to pace around his spaceship and mull over the fact that he needs to eliminate his best friend. The only friend he's made in the entire 20 years he's been in space. Brutus's intercom transmission starts buzzing. He answers. Hey Brutus, how you doing, man? Oh, Brutus, how interesting you called me. I'm okay. How are you, friend? I'm okay. I just got some pretty bad news. Oh, what's wrong? I found out that I gotta kill ya, man. Oh, I found out the same thing. Oh man, Brutus, what are we gonna do? I don't wanna kill ya, but I also don't wanna get fired. Oh, I feel the same way. Sorry. I don't know anything about this. Oh God, I hope no astronauts are listening to this. I feel the same way. What do we do? The two think it over. They brainstorm ideas, and then they decide on something. Brutus flies far ahead and turns his spaceship so the two face each other. And Brutus's intercom transmission system buzzes. Bzz, bzz, bzz. Okay, Brutus. I think this is a good plan. Me too, friend. This is the only way that I am okay with dying. Me too, friend. All right. Ready? 3, 2, 1. And the spaceships fly towards each other. And Brutus starts sweating. He's scared of death. But he knows that going with his friend is a pretty good way to go. Okay, team. I'm about to launch the missile. Brutus opens his mouth in shock. What? Brutus gasps. Oh, I left my intermission transmission mic on. Fuck. Brutus tries his best to turn the spaceship, but is going too fast. Oh, my friend, why would you do this to me? Sorry, pal. That's just the American dream. It's a metaphor. And Brutus launches the missile. And Brutus dies. And Brutus's ghost haunts Brutus. Hey guys, welcome back to our spooky podcast. I hope you loved that story. Was the American dream something that I could pull off there? Okay, great. Thanks for the nods. Welcome back to Spooky Stories with Mel and Jess. I am your host, Ahona. My favorite color is yellow. I was a dancer for 8 years, and today for lunch, I ate $9 sushi, and it was good. I don't even care. This is our third episode. I'm sure you've heard the first two already, but if you have not, that's okay. There's no order for any of this. Basically, our podcast is just a bunch of besties having some fun. We have a guest judge every episode. They pick a prompt for us, and then our friends Mel and Jess pick a Our friends Mel and Jess write a spooky story to go along with the prompt. Mel, would you like to say hello to the crowd?
Hi, I'm Melanie, and I read the prompt this time.
Oh yeah, you've become prompt spice. You wouldn't get that unless you listen to the second episode. Or you can get it. I don't care. Whatever. Do whatever you want. Jess, would you like to say hello to the crowd?
Absolutely. I also read the prompt, but I severely debated deviating anyways, but I didn't.
Oh, hell yeah. Nice. Our guest judge for this episode is our good friend Danielle. Danielle, would you like to say hello to everybody?
Hey, gamers. How's it going?
Oh my gosh, I'm so glad everyone is doing good or bad, respectively. All right, Danielle, here is the criteria you will be judging these stories on. There are three different things you got to think about when you rank them, and they're each out of 5, so it'll be a total of 15. Quick math. The first one is, would you tell this story around a campfire? The second one is, can you sleep tonight? And then the third one, and my favorite one, is, can you bring it home to mama? That one is up for interpretation. I don't know what it means, but do with that what you will. All right. Our prompt for this episode is, an astronaut and cosmonaut are on the International Space Station when their countries go to nuclear war with each other. Their last orders are to eliminate the other. All right, I believe we are starting with Mel's story. Mel, blow our socks off.
I just realized I didn't read the prompt. Well, I read it, I just didn't read the nuclear war part. So that part doesn't exist to me. Get it out of your mind. Okay, here's my spooky story. Sorry, that's Aladdin. Okay. He awoke with his lover next to him, their head pressed in the crook of his neck, and he thought about kissing their hair and resting his eyes for just another moment, and so he did. He awoke once again, and they were gone, the bed creating a small dip, missing their body. He too felt the longing for their warmth, and he thought about leaving to go find them, and so he did. He walked past the windows, slowing to watch the moving emptiness. Endless space, paralyzing. He stood for a moment in it, acknowledging the fear. Then he knew he needed to keep going, and so he did. He found them at the computers, their hair tousled and messy. He's placed his hand on the small of their back. They didn't smile. They kept staring at their screen. He didn't know what it said. He didn't know their language. But he saw he had his own message in his language he could check, and so he did. Urgent. NASA expedition compromised. Eliminate cosmonaut at once. He didn't need to read in their language to know that that's what theirs said too. He knew they knew he knew. And no one moved. There were only two here. He waited for them to kill him. And they didn't. He wanted to show them that he wouldn't either. And so he did. He moved to them and cupped their face in his. But they were different. Their eyes didn't meet his. He needed them to trust him. He needed to prove he would never hurt them. And so he did. He pulled them close and kissed them hard. They didn't move. They stared at him and he wiped the tears from their cheek. He wished he could tell them it would be okay. He wished he knew the words to reassure them. He wished he knew any words. But all he could do was hold them close and let them listen to his heartbeat. And so he did. He brought them back to bed and held their cold, shaking body in his. He waited until the sniffling stopped and the breathing slowed, and his body relaxed with theirs, his eyes begging for him to let them droop and give way to sleep. And so he did. He awoke and it was night. Then again, it was always night. The only lights were small fluorescent bulbs screwed into the ceiling. Time didn't matter anymore. It is simply now. And now they were gone again. And he knew he needed to go find them. And so he did. He padded past the windows and they were not there. And he searched in the rooms with the computers and they were not there. His body broke into a sweat, seducing him to panic, and so he did. He ran from room to room, but they were not there. He screamed for them, but they did not answer. He begged the gods to help find them. He needed to see where they were, and so he did. They were slumped over a dining room chair, their face as pale as when he held them, but not as cold. They were gone. Blood pooled onto the tile underneath them, spilling from their chest, opened by them, sliced by their own volition. They were gone. He couldn't stand. He didn't remember how. He only remembered how to scream. And so he did. But in space, no one can hear you scream. No one can hear you plead for a life that's already gone. All you can do is cry. And so he did. They left no note. He wouldn't have been able to read it even if they had. He was alone, holding the body of his love. And then he remembered who knew the controls of the ship. And then he remembered who knew the passcode to the kitchen. And then he remembered who knew the landing coordinates. And then he remembered who didn't. And he knew he was doomed. Unless. He would die here. He would starve here. All this work he did, all this work they did, would be for nothing. Unless. Meat doesn't stay good for long. Any survivalist knows that. You have less than 12 hours before it becomes rancid, untouchable. How long had it been already? The body was cold and starting to get stiff. He needed to get the courage, and so he did. He knew he needed to start with just one bite, just one small piece to give him the energy to stand. He just needed to cut a small bit off, and so he did. And he chewed, and he swallowed, and he stared at his love, knowing he needed to eat more, and so he did. And it started tasting good. It started tasting really good. He started wanting more than he needed. He started wanting to keep going. And so he did. And he made a mess. And they were delicious. And he loved them even more. Keep going. And so he did. But it's not enough. No, there's not much left of them now. And then what? You'll be hungry again, won't you? He nodded. He looked around. He wondered how long he could go without an arm. He wondered if he could just try one bite. And so he did. And it was even more delicious, warm and soft. He knew he couldn't stop there, not when it was all so good, not when his love had sacrificed so much for him. No, he must keep going. And so he did. In space, no one can hear you scream. No one can hear you shout for him that he's in too deep. Or no one can hear you send messages back home that you're worried about the astronaut, worried that he's becoming obsessed with you. No one can hear you receive the message that America's astronaut never made it onto the ship, that NASA's messages are all automatic. In space, no one can see the reports of a cannibal gone missing. It's just endless nothingness and the temptation to eat all you can. And so he did.
That was heartbreaking and disgusting. I feel sad, but I also feel sick. Great delivery, bestie. You did a great job. Do you have a title for your story? Okay. Let me know if it's in poor taste or if it's too soon. I have two options. I have dinner time. And I also have star-crossed lovers. LOVAH*S. Lovers.
I like dinner time.
Dinner time? Wait, did I name another one dinner time? Oh, kind of. Dinner, I'm dinner. Right. No, yeah, let's go with dinner time, I think. That's disgusting. Sorry, great story. Gross. I have a lot of mixed feelings. Oh, yuck. All right. Jess, try and top that, bestie. Just kidding, you're gonna do great. Blow my socks off.
Okay. Anderson, come in. A sharp voice pulled her attention from the last of her final departure checks. A voice with a strange sense of desperation. She turned to face where it was coming from. Anderson, damn it, this is ground control, come in. The voice was more panicked this time, and rife with interference. Moved by the urgency in its tone, she moved as quickly as she could to the console. Anderson here. What is it, sir? What's the ETA on the last shuttle out of here? A rush of static followed. It might have been a sigh. There's no easy way to say this, Anderson. No shuttle, no time. Sir? You're breaking up. It sounded like you said no shuttle. Affirmative. No shuttle's coming. I'm sorry. Her ears rang. She was sure, amidst the interference, she'd misheard. No shuttle. What? I'm so sorry. One last mission. The orders descended into more static. Shaking her head to clear her mind, she did her best to focus on the choppy words. Sir? Sir, I'm sorry I keep losing you. What's going on down there? The end. It's the end. Your last mission. Eliminate Ostrovsky. Sir? Officer Ostrovsky, the cosmonaut. You are to eliminate, right away. Can I ask why, sir? Nothing but silence and static on the other end. Sir? Out of her peripheral was a sudden, small, glowing shape, and she turned, moving herself to the nearby window to see the cause. Too dull and too early in the night to be the sunrise, she saw a blooming light and white clouds growing on the eastern coast of the United States, billowing inland. The more she looked across the landscape from the safe altitude of the space station, the more plumes of smoke she saw littered throughout. Oh my God. Oh my God, was all she could manage as she fell away from the window and back to the console. Ground control, come in. Is anyone there? Please. Silence. The static blended away into the still present ringing in her ears. She knew what those clouds meant, but she could only imagine the death, destruction, and chaos that must have been taking place back on Earth. Back home. The end. Ground control had said it was the end. She was on her own. Save for Ostrovsky, the cosmonaut, and only other person on board, also waiting for a ship to take him back to Earth. Ostrovsky, whom she had interacted with a number of times during her stay. Ostrovsky, whom she had just been ordered to kill. With what? There were no weapons on board. What need would there be for weapons in space? She would have to find a substitute, something. Her tool bag in the corner caught her attention, specifically the large metal wrench tied down to the side. It would have to do. She was only half aware of what she was doing as she untied the wrench and closed her hand around it, half still stunned by the order, by the idea that she was about to kill a man. For what? Anderson, the voice echoed down the narrow corridor she'd made it to, and a face appeared along with it at the far end of the junction. Shocked by the unexpected presence, she pressed her back once again to the wall, just at the edge of the opening, and called over her shoulder. Ostrovsky? Her hand tightened around the wrench as she worked to steady her breaths, her racing heartbeat. It made her feel sick, if only for a moment, saying the name of the man she intended she'd been ordered to kill. Did you see it? There was an undercurrent of some strange terror in the man's voice that set her on edge. They were alone, in space, compact in a tight little box of super insulated metal and machines. What could he have possibly seen? She suddenly feared that perhaps he was losing his mind. See what? She called back, fearfully curious. You didn't see it. After the bombs dropped. I don't know what you're talking about, Ostrovsky. Perhaps they were losing air. Or the men had tampered somehow with the oxygen, and she too would soon start feeling the effects, that delirium of gradual suffocation. You didn't see it. It was softer that time. Silence passed between them. Suddenly worried he might have been making his way towards her, she turned and cast her gaze down the corridor. He was where he had been before and was staring. Not at her, but through her. Dazed. It was enough to send a quick chill down her spine, and eager to separate herself from that look in his eyes, she once again pressed her back into the cool wall. She heard him take a few more heavy breaths before clearing his throat and calling with a new, more amiable tone. I have a proposition of sorts. What do you mean? You have been assigned to kill me. Her heart stopped in her chest. He knew. How? Why? I, in all truthfulness, have been ordered to kill you too. The thought made her blood run cold. She wasn't a killer. Could she hold her own against him if it came to that? She no longer had the advantage of surprise, even with the lack of gravity, strength still counted for something, and he definitely had the upper hand. What's your proposal? Do you intend to go through with it? Her grip loosened on the wrench a little. Did she? Could she really do that? Bludgeon a man she knew to death? Especially now that he knew she was going to? And besides, if she didn't go through with it, who would know? I want to offer a truce. A truce? For the night. Why? To rest. She paused. What's the point in sleep if we're going to die anyways, yeah? She heard the cosmonaut let out a soft but pitiful chuckle. The way I see it, yes, maybe you kill me in my sleep. A softer way to go. And whoever survives will only live to suffocate, no? She hadn't thought of that. Then she had a thought. Actually, they'd freeze before they suffocated. Ah, much better. Even though she found herself laughing along with the joke, it was, in a way, better. Freezing was closer to falling asleep than suffocating. For the body to go numb, unfeeling even against the cold, and slowly shut down with a whisper, as opposed to gaping and gasping in airless nothing. Her stomach lurched as she realized she was left considering how she'd prefer to die in a non-hypothetical situation. Would she rather fall asleep now and give Ostrovsky the chance to succeed in his mission, or fight and hopefully complete her own? The mission. How much loyalty do we owe dead men, she wondered. No doubt those who'd given her orders were dead or would soon be, along with thousands of others, those she knew. It was a mission to avenge then, but if Ostrovsky had been given the order to kill. The cosmonaut was evidently thinking the same thing as his voice sounded once again from down the hall. Mutual destruction. It was a more hollow tone in his voice that time, and she couldn't help but wonder who Ostrovsky must have been thinking about. who he was grieving, how much he had lost back home. We're going to die anyways, huh? True. A truce? Till morning? Or at least till the morning alarms went off? Agreed. Sleep well. You too. She returned to her cabin, wrench still in her grip, and assumed, hoped he had done the same. Sleep, however, did not come easy. As it turns out, there was something about knowing that someone might come and kill you while you slept that kept any restful feeling at bay. But each wakeful hour passed in silence, undisturbed by anything but the dull hum of the station she had grown used to and was often comforted by. It softened the sounds of the computers and machinery buzzing and whirring periodically. It was an unchanging sound, lulling, easy to give your attention to. There was peace in the focus, yes, but no peace enough for sleep. According to the clock, hours had passed. She was still sharply aware of the cold metal clutched in her hand, the weight of the object, heavy with what it represented. She figured if she was going to do it, breaking the truce might offer the edge she was lacking, give her an upper hand through the unexpected, stomach turning, heart threatening to leap out of her chest. She carefully made her way back to the corridor. Her ears were tuned to every sound, every creak, every shift, wildly aware that any sound could have been him, doing the same thing she was. Completing the mission. She reached the corridor, seeing that Ostrovsky must have switched off the lights, as the end where he had been was now swallowed in darkness, though was offered a slight visual reprieve by the light on her end, and by the cool light coming in from a window she knew was there. Squinting against this dark contrast in light, she saw a silhouette of something darker in the shadowed part of the ship. Ostrovsky, at the end of the corridor, suspended, unmoving, apparently having decided to sleep out in the open. Now was her chance. Pushing herself slowly, softly down the zero-gravity passage, wrench still clutched in her left hand, she took steady breaths in and out, careful not to make any sound that might have disturbed the sleeping figure. The closer she moved, the more her hands began to sweat, the more her palms began to shake and her heart began to pound. She gritted her teeth, jaw clenched in the hope that she could maintain her resolve just long enough to follow through. Everything that came after she could worry about after. She'd follow him into death not all that long after. Killing him was more on principle. It was an order. She was close enough now. The freely floating figure of the cosmonaut hovered about a foot in front of her, still and unwaking. Taking a deep breath, she lifted the wrench and set her gaze on the back of his head, which was facing her. She froze, arm up, hesitating for just another few breaths. However, in those moments of pause, the body began to turn, and she froze even further, recoiling. He was waking up, or was he? As Ostrovsky's body tilted to face her, she realized, upon seeing his ashen skin, half-open eyes, and seeing the blood pooled in the air around his arms, he was already dead. The wrench was released as both hands went to her mouth, a scream rising up in her throat as the dead man stared back at her, unblinking. Is that why he had proposed the truce? He planned to, but why? Her thoughts raced, and she almost didn't notice the recorder floating next to him until it had made its way closer to her, catching the light streaming in from the hall behind her and from the window on the wall nearby. With a shaking hand, she reached out and clasped the small, cool device and hit play. Anderson, I am sorry. They came. They came out from the dark when the bombs dropped like smoke. Like they were waiting for it. They knew. They were waiting to come. You didn't see them. You didn't, but I did. I am sorry to leave you with them, but I do not want to be here when they arrive. This is the end, comrade. The end.
It's the end,
Ground Control's voice once again swam around her thoughts, mixing together with Ostrovsky's. And then, a shadow passed the window, and she turned her face to see them. The shadow, the smoke, the end.
Damn.
Sorry, my animals are everywhere.
No, that's so fine. Let Juniper fart all she wants. Are her pronouns she? Okay, great. Let her fart all she wants. You guys are so talented. WTF. Do you have a name for your story? Sorry, I got the ooky yookies. Okay, I'll name it. I think... Oh, God. Okay. I want to change Mel's story, and then I'm gonna... do yours. I'm gonna change Mel's story to dinner time /, to make a little meh face. Like a little eh. And then I think for your story, I'm gonna name it OMG, poor Anderson. That was my takeaway. I feel very bad for her. Grody. Okay. Ooh, Danielle, you have got some... Sorry I made that sound. Ooh, Danielle, you have got some good stories to judge. I'm gonna go over the criteria, and then the floor is yours, bestie. All right. The first one out of 5 is, would you tell this story around a campfire? The second one out of 5 is, can you sleep tonight? And then the third one out of 5, and my fave, is, can you bring it home to mama? All right, take the floor. The floor is yours. The floor is yours. Take the floor.
Great. Wow. Well, thank you so much for delighting my ears with such wonderful stories this fine evening. I enjoyed them immensely. Okay. Campfire. Do you want me to do, like, Melanie's and then Jess's, or do them, like, boom, 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 boom?
You can do whatever you want. You're the boss, man. You're the boss, man.
Cool. Okay. Melanie, I'll start with your story because you went first. I loved it. It was like a little, like, love poem. It was like an epic love poem that... I guess it was still a love poem at the end. It was just like a different kind of love. You know what? Who am I to judge? The judge, I guess. But I also wrote, like, casual cannibalism with a little heart beside it. That's all I wrote. So for campfire, I said 4 out of 5 for a very specific reason. Because I think it's a very, like, campfire-friendly story. It has a nice twist to it. But I feel like people might get, like, physically ill hearing it. So, like, mayhaps if they do get physically ill, like, actually physically ill, it might put out the fire if they were to vomit into it. So maybe not super campfire-friendly. Just, like, thinking about all the possibilities here. Can I sleep tonight? I gave that a solid 3 out of 5. I think I could sleep tonight. Surprisingly, this is not the first cannibal story I've read this year. I don't know what that says about me and my reading habits. But I feel like the lovey tones, I'm like, oh, I feel like I still have, like, pleasant feelings, even though it was very unpleasant. But I have pleasant feelings about it. And then bring it home to mama. What an interesting category. It can mean so many things. I think how I will interpret it is, like, if my own, like, immigrant mother would enjoy these stories. And we watched Midsommar together, and she did not fare well, so I feel like she would not jive with this one. But I feel like she'd appreciate, like, the beautiful poeticness of it, because she's a romantic. So I'm giving it a 4 out of 5. Strong 4 out of 5. Maria would like it. Shout out to my mom.
Woo! Shout out. Oh my god, she's gonna get so much clout.
She's the biggest supporter. She will listen to this if I tell her. She listens to everything I do. We stan. Okay, Jess. Oh man. Jess, you are and I didn't say this before, but I've listened to all the episodes. I was a subscriber long, like, right when you guys announced this. I'm a huge fan. But Jess, I think you're such a great world builder. Your worlds are so clear in your stories, and they're so fun to get to experience. So this included. I loved your attention to detail. I did, however, You, I know what you meant when you said the recorder was floating in space, but the only image I had was like a plastic, like Melody's plastic recorder floating next to this body. And I know that was not your intention, but it made me giggle, which I loved so much. Okay, campfire. I'm giving campfire a solid 4 out of 5. I think that you can absolutely listen to this story around the campfire. I think the pacing's great. It's got some like nice suspense in it, so people could like scare the crap out of their friends sitting beside them. It's a great campfire story. Can I sleep tonight? I gave this one a 4 because like the isolation that you talked about in space is scary, man. If you think about it, space is like a scary thing. And I think you captured like how scary it would be to be in space and not be able to contact people. That's spooky as hell. So 4 out of 5, I might, you know, sleep with one eye open, I suppose. And then would I bring it home to mama? Would Maria like this story? This is what you have to ask yourself. I think she would like this story. So I'm giving it a 4 out of 5. I think she would just enjoy the, I think the feistiness of this story and the back and forth, the dialogue. She's a feisty lady. She's an Italian. She would like that. Great. That's it. Is that my job?
It is. Sorry. I'm a little distracted. Mel just asked me if I'm drinking soup. It's juice, bestie. It's pink.
You could be drinking soup.
It's mango raspberry lemonade, Mel. Oh, it's in our fridge.
Soup. That's my soup mug. You're drinking out of my soup mug.
This is your soup mug?
Yeah, it fills a whole can of soup.
What the heck? But it's such a cute mug for juice.
It's perfect for soup, dude.
I guess there can be two different perspectives and everything, huh? There are two sides of the same coin, huh? Such is life. Okay, I wanna rank. Danielle, you did a great job, but I miss out. So I'm also gonna rank. But my rankings mean nothing. I just get FOMO. Alright. I'm gonna start with Mel's because Mel first Dedoy. Oh, sorry I said Dedoy. Alright. Would I tell this story around a campfire? I think so. I think it depends on who I bring with me for my little camping adventures. I think this would be such a hit. So I'm going to give that a 4.5 out of 5. I'm going to take a 0.5 off because freaking yuck. Ugh, enough said. Can I sleep tonight? Kind of. I feel like it was less spooky and more like disturbing. I'm going to give that a 4 out of 5 because I think I can sleep, but I am going to have a weird dream, I feel. And then, can I bring it home to mama? I feel like my criteria for this one changes every episode because sometimes I'm like, my mom wouldn't like this. And then I'll hear a much grosser story and be like, my mom would love this. I'm going to give it a 5 out of 5, I think. I think my mom would be super into it. It's kind of icky, but I think so. Oh, Saya, I love you. Shout out to Saya. You're going to get so much clout. Okay, Jess's story. Would I tell the story on a campfire? I think so. I think the pacing was good. I don't think it was good for me, though. I gotta know what's happening. I'm not a very good suspense person, which is weird because I'm hosting a spooky thriller podcast, but I don't know. 4 out of 5. Can I sleep tonight? I think so. 5 out of 5. It was more sad than spooky, I feel. And then, can I bring it home to mama? Yeah. I think I would bring it home to mama, but I think it's just my own personal thing with the pacing, too. I think I'd just be like, mom, skip ahead. Wait till you see what happens. So that's a 4.5. Oh my god, you guys are tied in my books, if I'm doing the math right. And I am, because I wrote it all down, and the numbers match up. But my vote means nothing, so I'm deleting it. I just want to be involved. All right. According to my calculations, my team has gotten back to me. I am the team. Jess is our winner for this podcast episode by a whopping 1 point. Thank you so much, Danielle, for being our guest judge today. I hope you had a really, really great time. Thank you for your eloquent insight. Two big words for you there. Expanded your vocabulary a little, I think. Do you have any socials you would like to plug?
Sure. I have a TikTok account and an Instagram at d.j.books. I talk about books and other stuff, but mostly just books. And it's great. If you like, No, that's it. It's great. That's all. Bye.
Ooh. I follow you, just so you know.
Unfollow no, me. You don't need to follow me.
No. Not in like a judgy way. Just in a like, I'm a fan of you as a person kind of way. God, this is so embarrassing.
Whatever.
These results that our judge has given us is not the end of the voting for this episode. We have a poll up on our Twitter. The handle is SS Melon Jess, like the ships. Excuse me. My juice is not doing what it's supposed to. Not that it's supposed to clear my throat for me. Oh, whatever, you guys get it. Our handle is SS Melon Jess. Be sure to go on our Twitter and vote and tell us your opinions on who should be the winner. I will tally up everything by the beginning of the next episode. And on October 31st, I believe. Is that the date? Yeah. October 31st, we're going to have a very big, special, spooky Halloween episode. And I will announce our big season one finale winner. And they will get a Subway from me, paid by me. And it's going to be so, so yummy. Okay, Danielle, before we let you go here, pick a number between 1 and 101. And don't let it be 63, 18, 9, or 14. Please, please, please. You can pick those, but I don't think we're going to write about them. We've already done them. And one of them is just not in good taste.
Oh, God. I say 33.
Oh, how spooky. All right. Thank you for tuning in to our third episode of Spooky Stories with Mel and Jess. I'm your host, Ahona. I hope your socks have been blown off. I hope you're scared out of your pants. Sorry, I don't know why that's my instinct. Keep your pants on. Oh, in the first episode, I tried different host voices. Next time I'll spice things up, I think. Maybe. I might get insecure. Thank you so much for joining us. Have a great night and goodbye. Ooh. Fuck. Let me start over. I don't even know how to introduce my characters.